Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'll be reading the San Angelo Standard Times newspaper for the week of Sunday, July 3rd, 2022. I'll be reading a few local articles and then fill the rest of the time with state news articles and then some local sports articles, as well as a couple of feature columns. Program provides free lunches for kids in San Angelo this summer, by Rosanna Frere, published July 6th. The Tom Green County Hunger Coalition is offering free lunches to children this summer at 8 sites throughout San Angelo as part of the Kids Eat Free program. The meals will be available Monday through Friday during the months of July and August. To participate, children can simply show up at a program site during the scheduled times. There are no applications or requirements. Family members accompanying children will also receive a meal at no cost. The meal sites are funded by churches, nonprofits, businesses, and individual donations. For more information, visit www.tomgreencountyhungercoalition.org or call 211. Here are the available meal sites. Alta Loma Neighborhood, Alta Loma Elementary School, 1700 North Garfield Street, July 5th through August 5th, from noon to 1 p.m. Meals are prepared and served drive-through style by Sierra Vista Methodist Church. Bel Air Neighborhood, Belmore Baptist Church, 1214 South Bell Street, July 6th through August 5th, from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Meals are prepared and served by Glen Meadows Baptist Church. Blackshear Neighborhood, Nueva Vista Apartments, 2401 North Lily Street, July 11th through August 12th, from noon to 1 p.m., Monday, Wednesday, and Friday only. Meals are prepared and served by Galilee Missionary Baptist Church, Christian Fellowship, and Grace Church. Bradford Neighborhood, Calvary Baptist Church, 2401 Armstrong, July 11th through August 12th, from noon to 1 p.m., meals are prepared and served by Calvary Baptist Church. Fort Concho Neighborhood, Neighbors Cafe, back of Russ Street Ministries Building, 413 East Avenue D, July 5th through August 12th, from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Meals are prepared and served by First Baptist Church, First United Methodist Church, Emmanuel Baptist Church, and Southgate Church of Christ. Goliad Lakeview Neighborhood, Oasis Baptist Church, 306 East 39th, July 6th through August 5th, from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Meals are prepared and served by First United Methodist Church, St. Luke Methodist Church, and Emmanuel Episcopal Church. McGill Lone Star Neighborhood, Lone Star Middle School, 2500 Sherwood Way, July 6th through August 5th, from noon to 1 p.m. Meals are prepared and served drive-through style by Southgate Church of Christ, 9th and Main Church of Christ, and First Presbyterian Church. San Jacinto Neighborhood, Harris Avenue Baptist Church, 1026 East Harris Avenue, July 6th through August 5th, from noon to 1 p.m. Meals are prepared and served by Southland Baptist Church. From the inside pages of the San Angelo Standard Times, published Monday, July 4th, a state story. Arredondo resigns from the Uvalde City Council, remains as school district police chief, but has been placed on administrative leave, by Tony Blohetsky, Austin American Statesman. Pete Arredondo, the embattled chief of the Uvalde School District Police Force, is resigning from his position as a Uvalde City Council member, the Uvalde Leader News reported Saturday. The revelation came from a statement from Arredondo in a city press release in which he said the mayor, the city council, and the city staff must continue to move forward without distractions. I feel this is the best decision for Uvalde. Arradondo has faced growing questions about the law enforcement response to the May 24th shooting at Robb Elementary School, where 19 children and two teachers died. Texas Department of Public Safety officials have said that Arradondo assumed the role of incident commander and that police waited an hour before finally storming a classroom where the 18-year-old gunman had barricaded himself. Authorities have said that Arradondo erred in treating the situation as a barricaded subject rather than an active shooter, potentially costing life-saving minutes. Standard law enforcement training calls for police to immediately take action to stop a shooter. Arradondo has made few public comments, but he recently testified for 5 hours in private before a Texas House committee investigating the shooting. He remains in his school district police position, but has been placed on administrative leave. Arradondo was elected to the Uvalde City Council shortly before the shooting and was sworn into office days later in a private ceremony. In the weeks since, he has faced growing calls to step down. As we continue to grieve over the tragedy that occurred on May 24th, we pray for the families involved and our community, his statement said. Uvalde has a rich history of loving and supporting thy neighbor, and we must continue to do so. In speaking with other communities that have had similar tragedies, the guidance has been the same. Continue to support the families, continue to support our community, and definitely to keep our faith. In a statement, Uvalde city officials said they had not received notification of Arradondo's plans to step down, but added that it is the right thing to do. Here are two stories that are Texas-based articles published on the front page of the San Angelo Standard Times, Saturday, July 2nd, 2022. Abortion in Texas. What's legal now? Options for pregnant people and birth control. By Nicole Villalpando, Austin American Statesman. Recent abortion legal actions, the U.S. Supreme Court ruling on abortion issued June 24th, the 2021 Texas heartbeat law, which bans abortions once a heartbeat is detected, usually around 6 weeks of gestation, and the 2021 trigger law that is set to be in effect 30 days after Supreme Court ruling banning abortions in Texas, have raised questions about what these laws and rulings mean on a practical level. Austin Regional Clinic obstetrician gynecologist Dr. Crystal Berry Roberts answered our questions on different scenarios. She and Austin Regional Clinic do not currently provide abortion care, but do provide follow-up care as well as connect pregnant people to resources. If I don't want to become pregnant, what should I do? Barry Roberts said anyone who wants to prevent a pregnancy should see their doctor or find a doctor if they do not currently have one. Go to where you can get the facts, she said. What are your options and how will the law affect you? Options could include everything from the birth control pill or an IUD, which are reversible, to permanent choices such as tubal ligation, hysterectomy, or vasectomy. What happens if I do become pregnant? Find out as soon as possible and begin talking to your doctor as soon as possible about what options are still available. If you do opt for abortion care in Texas or outside of Texas, don't skip follow-up care with your doctor, Barry Roberts said. And don't forget to include it in your medical history. It's part of your overall health. Is Plan B a form of abortion and affected by the ruling? No, Plan B is still available. Plan B, one of the brand names for over-the-counter, FDA-approved emergency contraception, can prevent a pregnancy. Plan B equals emergency contraception. It is not an abortion. It will not work to stop a pregnancy that is already established, Barry Roberts said. Is Plan B a birth control option? Plan B should not be used as a primary birth control method, Barry Roberts said. Plan B uses the same ingredients found in standard birth control pills, but the dosing and the timing of use makes it for emergency contraception. It is most effective within 72 hours of unprotected sex. Having another birth control method fail, such as a condom breaking or a missed birth control pill, or in the case of rape. It can mess with a person's hormonal levels and throw off their regular cycle. It would not be ideal for birth control, Barry Roberts said. if someone is using it as their regular birth control, she said, they should see a doctor to get much better methods. Is regular birth control affected by the ruling? Barry Roberts has not received any information that it will be, she said. She is regularly prescribing birth control and talking to patients about their options. She's not having any trouble getting those prescriptions filled or covered by insurance. She does not believe that will change after the trigger law takes effect. What about the abortion pill? Will that still be available? The abortion pill is typically two medications. Mifepristone, which stops the pregnancy from growing, and misoprostol, which causes the uterus to empty. It's designed for a first trimester pregnancy, and its effectiveness goes down the later in the first trimester. Currently, it can be prescribed to a person in Texas before 6 weeks gestation. It's unclear what will happen if the trigger law goes into effect. It might be possible for a woman to do a telehealth appointment with someone in another state and receive the abortion pill, but a lot is still not known, Barry Roberts said. She said she is concerned people might not have coordinated care if they are not able to use local care. There can be complications, such as excessive bleeding, or it might not work. She also worries that a person might get access to these medications without appropriate medical care and misuse them, or not have clear guidance on how to use them. Then, she said, a friend, a boyfriend, a mother is walking into a bathroom and seeing her bleeding out because she misused a medication or used a device, or she allowed someone else to do it. Are there exceptions to the current abortion law or trigger law? Yes, the life of the mother is mentioned in both laws, Barry Roberts said. Instead of that decision being between a pregnant woman and their doctor, those decisions would more likely be taken up by groups of people such as hospital ethics panels, which currently oversee matters such as when to terminate life support, if there is a disagreement between doctors and next of kin, or if there is no next of kin. Barry Roberts said it's possible cases such as that of a pregnant person who has a history of strokes or hemorrhages could go before a medical ethics board and be heard. It will be a process that will take time, which could be difficult for the pregnant person and their family, Barry Roberts said. It will not be just a list of conditions that will qualify. The mental health of the mother could be one of the questions that goes before an ethics committee to determine if this meets the criteria of the safety of the mother. What about in cases of rape or incest? There are no exceptions for those in the current law or the trigger law. What happens if the baby is not viable? If the baby is already dead, then a doctor can perform a dilation and a curettage procedure or a dilation and evacuation procedure to remove the baby from the womb and take care of the mother. That is not considered an abortion. If the baby is still alive but has a genetic condition that means it will not survive outside the womb or might not make it to birth, there is currently no exception in the abortion law to allow for the mother to terminate the pregnancy. The pregnant person would have to continue to carry that baby until that baby dies or until she gives birth. Pregnant people in this situation don't have an option in Texas to receive abortion care, but some are traveling to other states for care. What happens in an emergency? If a mother's life is at risk, doctors can still choose the mother, Barry Roberts said. The example she gives is the mother who is at 14 or 16 weeks gestation, whose water breaks or who starts hemorrhaging. The doctor is going to take care of that mother first. The baby isn't going to survive that. What about an ectopic pregnancy? That is a pregnancy that occurs outside the uterus. It is life-threatening to the mother and is not viable and needs to be removed. Treatment of ectopic pregnancy is not prohibited by Texas abortion laws. Also from the front page, Saturday, July 2nd. Some Texas schools may call slavery involuntary relocation. The Associated Press, Austin. Public schools in Texas would describe slavery to second graders as involuntary relocation under new social studies standards proposed to the state's education board. A group of nine educators submitted the idea to the State Board of Education as part of Texas's efforts to develop new social studies curriculum, according to the Texas Tribune. The once-a-decade process updates what children learn in the state's nearly 8,900 public schools. The board is considering curriculum changes 1 year after Texas passed a law to eliminate topics from schools that make students feel discomfort. Board member Aisha Davis, a Democrat who represents Dallas and Fort Worth, raised concerns during a June 15th meeting that the term wasn't a fair representation of the slave trade. The board sent the draft back for revision, urging the educator group to carefully examine the language used to describe events. "I can't say what their intention was, but that's not going to be acceptable," Davis told the Texas Tribune on Thursday. Part of the proposed draft standards obtained by the Texas Tribune say students should compare journeys to America, including voluntary Irish immigration and involuntary relocation of African people during colonial times. Texas's public education system has become heavily politicized in recent years, with lawmakers passing legislation to dictate how race and slavery should be taught in schools, and conservative groups pouring large amounts of money into school board races. Texas drew attention for a similar situation in 2015 when a student noticed wording in a textbook that referred to slaves who were brought to America as workers. The book's publisher apologized and promised to increase the number of textbook reviewers it uses. The shops on Beauregard offer a place to showcase small businesses, by Rosanna Frere, published July 6th. A new San Angelo store showcases over 10 small businesses under one roof. The Shops on Beauregard, which opened in June at 2012 West Beauregard Avenue, offers women's clothing, shoes, accessories, children's clothing, home decor, candles, clay earrings, and more. Taylor Glass owns the shops and one of the businesses inside, Glass Threads. Glass took some time to answer questions about her business. For more information, call 575-390-5962 or email theshopsonbeauregard@gmail.com. How did you get started in this business? After having my daughter, I was working from home. And while I loved being my own boss, I really missed having coworkers. I have always been a people person and wanted to come up with a way to have coworkers, but still have some freedom. I love working on my earrings at the shops, seeing customers and having coworkers in the shops as well. Who was your biggest supporter when you started? I have two, actually. My husband has always believed in me and my drive to become a business owner, but starting a business is scary. He has always been our financial security. There's no way I would be where I am today without him. My other biggest supporter is my mom. She has been to almost every show I've done. She was up at the shops helping paint, clean, steam clothing, and more. She is always wearing a pair of my earrings and isn't shy to tell someone I made them and show my Instagram page off. What should make your business stand out? The fact that you can buy from 10-plus small businesses in one place. Shopping small is something people should be proud of. When you shop small, you're helping a mom or dad pay for soccer lessons rather than help pay for a CEO's third vacation home. You're also growing their confidence. I know from experience, our customers are so much more than just customers. They become friends, people you look forward to seeing at the shop or at your next pop-up event. Entrepreneurship can be a lonely place. What can help with that? Opening a shop with multiple vendors in it. Vendors are always coming in to change out products, get pictures for social media, help with the shop, or just come by to say hi. I love the community the shops has given me. Each one has become someone that I can call on when I've had a difficult day, because as a business owner, they understand. What motivates you to go to work every morning? My 18-month-old daughter. I want her to know she can accomplish anything she sets her mind to with God on her side. She pushes me to be the best small business owner I can be. One day, I would love for her to join me or take over my business if that's something she is interested in. San Angelo Church to offer cooling center on 100-degree days by Rosanna Frere, published July 6th. St. Paul Presbyterian Church in San Angelo is offering a cooling center this summer when temperatures reach 100 degrees. Pastor Tim Davenport Herbst said the cooling center at 11 North Park Street is open Monday through Friday on days when the National Weather Service expects the temperature to hit 100. This week, temperatures are over 100 are expected every day through Sunday. We usually decide on Sundays if we will be open, if we'll open the center for the following week, Davenport Herbst said. The hours of operation for the center are noon to 7 p.m. at the church gym. We have free Wi-Fi, couches, chairs, books and magazines, conversation, and air conditioning, Davenport Herbst said. We don't have a pet setup, but we have shade and water at the church. The schedule will be posted on the church's Facebook page and on the office door. This ministry is financed by a partnership with the Homeless Planning Coalition. For more information, call 325-653-5691. Ballinger Cares finds new home for community pantry. By Paul Harris, published July 4th. An idea that began more than 25 years ago lives on through Ballinger Cares, a nonprofit organization dedicated to assisting those in need with food, clothing, and household items. Ballinger Cares has a new home at the Old National Guard Armory at 402 Crossan Avenue, appropriately named the Hugh Wade Center. Better known as Father Wade, it was the longtime Ballinger pastor's idea to start a food pantry after he arrived at St. Mary's Star of the Sea Catholic Church in 1996. The program was operated by the Ballinger Ministerial Alliance, and the pantry was staffed by volunteers of all faiths. We didn't have a way to get people food that needed it, and so it was because of him that it got started, said Peggy Freeman, one of the volunteers who worked at the community pantry until it closed in September 2020 after 22 years when the owner decided to sell the building. Wade died the following month at the age of 74. A group of us got together and decided the pantry was too important to the community, Freeman said. Those of us who worked there knew how many people came in for clothing and food. After the pantry closed, the Ballinger Ministerial Alliance continued to distribute food from the Senior Citizen Center with the monthly shipments they received from the Food Bank of West Central Texas in Abilene. In May 2021, Ballinger Cares opened a resale center in an 800-square-foot space owned by Reynolds County to begin offering clothing again. A grant from the San Angelo Health Foundation recently allowed Ballinger Cares to purchase the armory, giving them the room they needed to bring everything back together. All the shirts in there cost $1, and children's items are 50 cents. A few really nice things are marked up, like formal wear, things like that. But they're good prices, and when someone needs something, they don't have to pay anything, Freeman said. The food is free to those who qualify, but anyone who has emergency needs will be helped out when they need it. Ballinger Cares also has furniture, various household items, and even a bridal room with new dresses, as well as women's evening wear. The armory gave Ballinger Cares so much room, they were able to welcome other community-based organizations into the building, such as Meals on Wheels, Cornerstone Community Action Agency, and the Health and Wellness Coalition of Reynolds County. Freeman said Ballinger Cares is in need of more volunteers since its recent expansion. For more information on volunteering or donating, call the Hugh Wade Center at 325-365-4300 or Board Chairman Carla Campbell at 325-365-6049. Ballinger Cares is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday's hours are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Fairmont Cemetery staff to clean burial grounds July 15th by Rosanna Frere, published July 4th. Fairmont Cemetery staff will clean the burial grounds Friday, July 15th, according to a City of San Angelo news release. The staff will be removing flowers and other items from graves at 1100 West Avenue Inn so the property can be cleaned and trimmed. Those who want to preserve items should remove them from grave sites before the end of the day this Friday, July 8th, the release stated. Items may be returned to the cemetery beginning Monday, August 1st. Items left at grave sites will be picked up and held for 1 week for residents to pick up. Unclaimed items will be disposed of Thursday, July 21st. Lot owners are reminded that flowers should be placed only to the sides or in cradles on top of monuments, the city stated. This allows for maintenance of grave sites. For more information, call 325-655-9475. Pinnacle Bank acquires Crockett National Bank, from staff reports, published July 1st. Todd Huckabee, CEO of Crockett National Bank, and Sid Dinsdale, chairman of Pinnacle Bank Corp, announced the signing of an agreement for Pinnacle Bank to acquire Crockett National Bank of San Antonio. Crockett National Bank has a total asset size of $630 million, with five branches in Texas, including San Angelo and Ozona. In addition, they have two loan production offices, LPOs, located in San Antonio and New Braunfels. Crockett National Bank will become part of Pinnacle Bank's 22-branch network in Texas. The people, hospitality, and charm of the great state of Texas make it a wonderful place to do business. We appreciate this opportunity to welcome Crockett National Bank to the Pinnacle Bank family and expand our footprint in the state, Dinsdale said. All locations gained through the acquisition will continue operation under the Pinnacle Bank community banking philosophy of local management and local control, according to the release. At closing, Huckabee will become a regional president of Pinnacle Bank. Pinnacle Bank's commitment to community and customer service aligns closely with the foundations that our banking philosophy has always been based on. We are happy to enter this partnership and continue service to our local area, Huckabee said. The transaction is anticipated to close in the second half of 2022, pending regulatory approval, according to the release. Financial details of the transaction were not disclosed. Founded in 1938, Pinnacle Bank Corp. is a family-owned $17.7 billion financial holding company operating 161 community banks in eight states, according to the release. For more information, visit PINNBANKTX.com. And now here's a feature column. Consider chilling your wine during the scorching summer by Gus Clemens, special to the Standard Times, published July 4th. Newsflash. We are in the dog days of summer, or high summer, as it was called in the Old South. Whatever you call the scorching time between early July and mid-August, it is time to chill your wines. That includes chilling red wines. Forget the myth that chilling reds means killing reds. Lighter, less alcoholic, less tannic, less oaky red wines do fine chilled. And yes, you can even put an ice cube in your glass if you wish. Some chillable reds. Cinsault's delicate tannis and its strawberry and cherry flavors show well when chilled. Gamay, best known for its use in Beaujolais, chill its lighter-bodied iterations. New World Pinot Noirs with lighter bodies and more fruit-forward approaches work well. Heavier Pinot Noirs, including lower-end, mass-produced Pinots, are not as suitable. Zweigelt, Austria's most planted red, brings cherries and chocolate and soft tannins to the chilled red strategy. You likely have other favored lighter reds. Experiment. If you don't like the red chilled, leave it alone, and in this season of triple-digit days, it will warm up soon enough to be enjoyed in your air-conditioned abode. General tips. Chilled reds should be between 50 and 55 degrees Fahrenheit. Chill the bottle to your refrigerator's temperature, then take it out an hour before serving. Conversely, put the bottle in your refrigerator 30 to 45 minutes before serving. Chill in a bucket of ice and water. Ice alone is too slow. Add salt to the water to speed things up even more. If you are not willing to warm to chilled reds, you can always fall back on chilled rosés and light bright whites. There is no reason to eschew wine just because cows are producing evaporated milk and hot water is coming out of both of your taps. Tasting notes. So-called Blosser Estate Rosé of Pinot Noir, Dundee Hills, Oregon, 2021. Chill out with this chilled on a hot summer's day. $17 to $25. Domaine de Cala Rosé, Côte-Verreau Province, 2021. Restrained red fruits flirt with your palate rather than assault it. 60% sin salt. $19 to $21. McKay Cellars Rosé of Sin Salt, Lodi Appellation, 2019. Province style rosé from quality Lodal producer. Follows Sin Salt Varietal profile very closely. $35. Last round. It was so hot, farmers fed their chickens ice so they wouldn't lay boiled eggs. Wine time. And now to fill some time, we'll read a few local sports articles. San Angelo's Todd Perry steps down as Texas Tech women's tennis coach, from staff reports published July 1st. The Texas Tech Athletic Department announced Thursday that Todd Petty has resigned as head coach of the women's tennis team. Petty, a native of San Angelo, had been the head coach of the Red Raiders since 2009 and led the team to the NCAA tournament on a regular basis. During his 14-year tenure, 13 as head coach, Texas Tech won 3 Big 12 regular season titles, advanced to the Sweet 16 four times, and reached the Elite Eight 3 times. Petty cited a desire to spend more time with family and to transition away from coaching in the college ranks. I want to thank my players, staff, and Texas Tech athletics for the past 14 years, Petty said. It's been a wonderful journey. I look forward to the future and what it holds, but will always support the Red Raiders. Petty was named Big 12 Coach of the Year 3 times in his career, in 2011, 2012, and 2017. He is the winningest coach in program history, compiling a record of 229 and 106. Petty was an All-Southland Conference performer at the University of Texas at San Antonio as a player in 1999 and 2000. He transferred to Midwestern State and was selected as an ITA All-American and Lone Star Conference All-Academic honoree in 2002. Petty started his coaching career as a graduate assistant for Midwestern State and helped lead the men's team to the NCAA Division II tournament in 2003 and 2004. Central Bobcats pumped for season after state 7-on-7 performance by Amy McDaniel, published June 25th. After inconsistency in the spring game in May, San Angelo Central's offense got a boost from an appearance in the championship bracket at the state 7-on-7 tournament on Saturday at Veterans Park in College Station. In their first appearance in the state tourney since 2019, the Bobcats won two games in pool play Friday. Despite falling 34-13 to Klein Collins in the single elimination bracket Saturday, the Bobcats were happy with the experience and improved play. Senior wide receiver Cedric Fuentes said the chemistry between quarterback and receivers continues to improve since 7-on-7 play last year. We had a whole bunch of people who couldn't make tournaments, and I felt like we didn't have a whole lot of team chemistry last spring, said Fuentes. Fuentes said he and fellow senior receivers Jacob English, Kevon Rice, and Jaden Gibson are motivated by their return to state competition in the event, which began in 1998. It really shows we're going to succeed next football season. Everyone is really pumped up. Players, coaches, parents. Everybody is really excited, Fuentes said. With the return of All-West Texas selection, Tyler Hill to the 7-on-7 lineup as the starting quarterback, the Cats were smoother in the passing game. Everyone was just a tiny bit off during the spring game, Fuentes said, with Hill missing from the lineup. The senior said on Friday, and even Saturday in the loss to Collins, that the Cats completed a lot of passes. We had some deep balls, a lot of intermediate and short routes, and we did what we needed to do to get in the end zone. Collins ended up in the semifinals, where it lost to eventual champion DeSoto, which was an 11-3 team last year in the UIL 11-man season that reached the state quarterfinals. Collins was a district champion last year. Central beat Plano 26-24 and Clearbrook 20-15, but fell to Middle Othian 19-18 in pool play on Friday to finish second behind Middle Othian, which was undefeated. Central has a 12-year streak of qualifying for the playoffs during the fall, with six district titles during that time. The Bobcats are led by head coach Kevin Crane, who was the offensive coordinator for 12 seasons under Brent Davis before taking over last year and posting a 4-7 record with a playoff appearance. Crane visited with Texas Football Magazine's Matt Stepp on Friday in College Station and said he was excited about the Bobcats' return to the state tourney. Traditionally, in our case, every year we made it to state 7-on-7. We have a pretty good year, so we're hoping to build on that momentum, Crane said. He said there's nothing like on-the-job experience. I was there with Coach Davis for 12 years, and he taught me a lot, but you never really qualify until you're behind that desk, sitting in that chair, Crane said. I learned a lot in year one, and I was very grateful to have had year one, and we're excited about year two. The Central players, which finished up spring practice May 18th, will continue strength and conditioning training and start fall season workouts August 8th. Central's scrimmage is August 18th at San Angelo Stadium against Lubbock Coronado. The Cats open the 2022 season on the road at Killeen Shoemaker. Central's home opener is not until September 10th, with the Cats hosting Austin Vandegrift after a week two road trip to El Paso Montwood. And now we're going to read some Texas stories that have been published the last few days in the San Angelo Standard Times. We'll begin with two stories that are on the front page, published Wednesday, July 6th in the San Angelo Standard Times. El Paso area sees rise in migrant deaths by Martha Pawlowski and Lauren Villagran, El Paso Times. Border crossing deaths in the El Paso area are mounting as migrants desperate to reach the U.S. risk dangerous canals, and scorching temperatures. At least 37 migrants have died of injuries, drowning, dehydration, and vehicle accidents crossing into El Paso and southern New Mexico since October 2021, compared with 39 in all of fiscal 2021. The Border Patrol in the Big Bend sector east of El Paso has reported an additional 24 deaths in that period, though its figure does not include bodies recovered by other law enforcement agencies. 15 people, thought to be migrants, have drowned in canals along the border or died of water-related injuries, the majority since irrigation season began in early June, when the depth of the fast-moving water increased sharply. In the rugged landscape surrounding El Paso, climate change is driving up temperatures in the Chihuahuan Desert, where migrants risk deadly dehydration or heat stroke. 5 migrants have died of heat exposure in the El Paso sector since October. "This is a major human rights crisis at the border," said Fernando Garcia, executive director of the nonprofit Border Network for Human Rights in El Paso. Irrigation season brings more canal drownings. Irrigation season on the Rio Grande poses a quiet threat. The system of concrete-lined canals that deliver Rio Grande water released from the Elephant Butte in New Mexico to farms in Texas is designed to move the water rapidly. Inches of water in winter can become 10 to 12 feet deep during the summer. The purpose of the canal is to get water as fast as possible to our agriculture community, Border Patrol agent Orlando Marrero said. At 62 pounds per square foot, the water traveling 9 miles per hour will create exactly 302 pounds of force, said Marrero, a trained emergency medical technician. Imagine an average person, 5'8" or 5'9", in 10-foot deep water. There is no way. They are going to be swept. Agents in the sector go through yearly swift water training. "Our El Paso station leadership is fully aware of the dangers," Border Patrol El Paso sector spokeswoman Valeria Morales said. "There are chains and rescue ropes along the canal, but sometimes migrants are unable to grab onto them or they are too weak to hold on." Morales said El Paso station leaders have discussed ways to prevent drownings in the canals. The El Paso County Irrigation District controls water flow through the canals, which are under the jurisdiction of the International Boundary and Water Commission. Irrigation District Manager Jesus Reyes said most drowning deaths take place in the American Canal alongside the border fence, which under the Trump administration was built taller to 30 feet. "That made it more dangerous," Reyes said. "Those people are coming over, and in some cases, they climb over and fall directly into the canal. These people are trying to come over to make a better life," he said. "All we can do is try and get the word to these people not to attempt it." IBWC Public Affairs Officer Lori Kumansky said each year the commission and other agencies emphasize the dangers of approaching the canals. Crossing Chihuahuan Desert, a dangerous gamble. The Chihuahuan Desert surrounding El Paso, extending east into Big Bend country and west across New Mexico, rises and falls over mountainous ridges and offers no respite from heat that can push the human body to its limit. This fiscal year, 5 of the 37 migrant deaths in the El Paso sector, which has 264 miles of borderline in New Mexico and West Texas, have been heat-related. Dehydration starts as dry mouth. Dry mouth turns to dry heaving. The veins constrict and muscles begin to cramp up. Or the body will stop sweating and begin seizing, signs of heat stroke. The New Mexico region, Lordsburg and Deming, it is remote and mountainous, Morales said. It takes hours to days for these groups to reach a highway. It is already harsh terrain, and you add triple-digit temperatures to that mix, it's dangerous. Criminal organizations routinely leave behind injured or dehydrated migrants who then die in the desert, she said. 2 pedestrians killed in early April on Interstate 10 near Sunset Heights might have been undocumented immigrants, but law enforcement has not confirmed their identities. If Border Patrol leadership believes the person is a migrant, the death often will be included in the statistics, but not always. There have been instances where a person dies in the canal or in the desert, and they are not a migrant. They are a local, Morales said. Climate change multiplies risks in Big Bend sector. Arizona's Sonoran Desert, which has even higher temperatures than the Chihuahuan Desert, has claimed migrant lives for decades. But an increase in border crossings in West Texas and rising temperatures linked to climate change mean more migrants are being exposed to deadly heat in the Chihuahuan Desert. East of El Paso, Border Patrol agents in the Big Bend sector cover 517 miles of U.S.-Mexico borderline, demarcated by the Rio Grande. The desert terrain is rugged and the climate extreme, ranging from severe heat in the summer to freezing temperatures in the winter. The Border Patrol has recorded 24 migrant deaths in Big Bend in the first 8 months of fiscal 2022, the same number as in all of fiscal 2021. The total number is probably much higher. The Culberson County Sheriff's Office alone reported recovering more than 20 bodies in 2021. Between 2006 and 2021, annual Customs and Border Protection encounters in the remote Big Bend sector did not surpass 10,000. Then, during fiscal year 2021, encounters skyrocketed to 37,266. In fiscal year 2022, Big Bend has seen 25,573. The real concern for us, as it is for El Paso to our west, is the summertime heat and the unscrupulous actions of the smugglers, the coyotes, who are pushing people through our sector who would not have come through before, including people who are older or not in good shape, said Greg Davis, spokesman for the Border Patrol's Big Bend sector. Increased border crossings coincide with record high temperatures. Records have fallen across Texas in May and June. El Paso's average maximum temperature during May is 88.7 degrees, but this year it was almost 5 degrees hotter at 93.3 degrees. The weather station at Rio Grande Village in Big Bend tied the all-time temperature record of 117 degrees June 8th. In an October 2021 study, state climatologist John Nielsen Gammon found that West Texas counties are experiencing faster temperature increases than other parts of the state. Since 1975, average temperatures have increased 0.83 degrees in El Paso County, 0.71 in Culberson County, and 0.70 in Hudspeth County. A study published in the journal Science last year found that risks for migrants crossing the Sonoran Desert will increase as the climate changes. Over the next three decades, higher temperatures will increase the risk of dehydration, and migrants will have to carry 34% more water to survive, researchers said. In the next 30 years, with rising temperatures, it's going to become even more extreme and push those levels to even further beyond what humans can actually sustain. Hallie Walker, a University of Idaho researcher and co-author of the study, told The Guardian. Deterrence measures have failed to discourage migrants. Advocates say restrictive immigration policies are pushing people to cross in dangerous areas. For more than 2 years, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Title 42 public health order has allowed the Border Patrol to quickly expel most migrants to Mexico or their countries of origin, blocking many from seeking asylum or other immigration relief. The quick expulsions also preclude prosecutions for illegal entry, leading some migrants to try to cross again and again. Fernando Garcia said that since the 1990s, immigration enforcement has funneled migrants to cross in more remote areas. In recent years, he said, policies including Title 42 and the migrant protection protocols, plus the 30-foot border fence, have made the problem even worse. We were very concerned that the number of deaths was going to spike dramatically, Garcia said, and unfortunately, nobody is doing anything. We have never seen so many deaths in a short period of time, he said. the structure of that canal means that whoever falls there does not come out alive. The Border Patrol has stepped up its efforts to prevent migrants from dying. In the El Paso sector, the Border Patrol has installed 17 rescue beacons in areas with significant migrant traffic and limited cell phone service. The towers are topped with a strobe light and a flag with the emergency cross. When a migrant pushes the help call button, the tower transmits a precise location for the Border Patrol to dispatch agents to rescue. There were 165 rescue beacons deployed across the southwestern border in January, according to a Government Accountability Office report. The agency has also installed more than 2,500 placards with geographic coordinates that migrants can provide to 911 rescuers. Garcia said these preventative measures will fall short without change to immigration policy. This is not only about posting signs. This is about the whole policy that does not allow migrants and asylum seekers to come to the United States legally, he said. We need to fundamentally change this policy of deterrence at the border to alleviate the pressure of migrants going into these dangerous places. Official reports undercount border deaths. The true number of migrants dying in attempts to cross the U.S.-Mexico border is difficult to pin down. The Border Patrol does not recover the bodies of all the people who perish in their attempts to cross, as local law enforcement agencies are often the first responders. In a directive accompanying the 2020 appropriation to the Department of Homeland Security, a congressional committee required the Border Patrol to report data on migrant deaths, create plans to reduce migrant deaths, and coordinate with other agencies, such as local medical examiner's offices. A GAO report in April found that the Border Patrol fell short on the directive. Border Patrol has not collected and recorded or reported to Congress complete data on migrant deaths or disclosed associated data limitations, the GAO found. Human rights organizations create their own tallies of migrant deaths in the absence of complete official data. The United Nations International Organization for Migration documented at least 650 deaths of people attempting to cross the U.S.-Mexico border between January and December 2021, more than in any other year since they began documenting deaths in 2014. In the report, Michelle Klein Solomon, IOM Regional Director for North America, Central America, and the Caribbean, said saving lives should be a top priority for the region. Families in search of the truth about missing migrant relatives need answers, she said, and policymakers need better data to ensure migration is safe and dignified for all. Reporting contributed by Daniel Barunda. And the second story from the front page of the Standard Times, July 6th. Texas has a 90% high school graduation rate. Statistic used by Abbott campaign has support. By Nuseba Mizan, Austin American Statesman. Governor Greg Abbott's reelection campaign lauded education in Texas with a May 15th video touting Blue Ribbon Public Schools, U.S. News' ranking four Texas high schools among the top 50 STEM high schools, and the Texas public high school graduation rate. Governor Greg Abbott has led education to a brighter future, Abbott's campaign Twitter account tweeted. That's why Texas's public high school graduation rate is at 90% overall. Does Texas have a 90% high school graduation rate? State data support the Abbott campaign statistic. Texas data on high school graduation rates. PolitiFact Texas reached out to Abbott's campaign but did not hear back. However, the video credited the Texas Education Agency for the graduation rate statistic. Of the students who started ninth grade in 2016-17, scheduled to graduate in 2020, 90.3% graduated within 4 years, according to a 2019-20 report by the agency. This percentage is called the four-year longitudinal graduation rate because it measures how much of a starting ninth grade class completes high school within 4 years. The remaining 10% might have continued school, received a high school equivalency certificate, or dropped out. Abbott's statistic checks out. Some demographic groups have better graduation rates than others. Economically disadvantaged students graduated 6 percentage points lower, 87.5%, than those who were not, 93.5%. Compared with state averages, there were lower graduation rates and higher dropout rates for students in special education programs and students identified as learning English as a second language. Graduation rates as a campaign point. Abbott and his predecessor, Rick Perry, have long rallied around their work on education and touted Texas's high school graduation rate. In 2018, Abbott said Texas ranked among the nation's top five states for its high school graduation rate. PolitiFact Texas rated that true. In 2015 and 2013, PolitiFact rated statements by Perry to be mostly true that Texas's high school graduation rates were the third highest in the nation. In 2011, Texas tied with five states for number three. Texas was ahead of the nation of the national average graduation rate at 86% in 2018-19, according to the National Center for Education Statistics. It was among eight states with a 90% or higher graduation rate. In the mid-2000s, Texas took an aggressive approach to turning around high schools that were not graduating at least 60% of their senior class, said Jacob Kursky, assistant professor of educational psychology, leadership, and counseling at Texas Tech University. Many states, including Texas, saw gains around this time because of the No Child Left Behind Act. High schools later also adopted career and college readiness models. The state education system under Abbott continued this effort, which began under Perry's leadership. Compared to other states, I think Texas is not afraid to make changes and to try things out, which I think is a really important and powerful perspective to have in policy, Kursky said. At the end of the day, Texas is improving on all metrics with respect to graduation rates and attrition rates. Our ruling. Governor Greg Abbott's campaign tweeted, "That's why Texas's public high school graduation rate is at 90% overall," accompanying a video touting K-12 and higher education wins. "That matches data from the Texas Education Agency, so we rate it true."
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.